Welcome back to WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and WNST, Baltimore Positive. It's bye week. It's bonus round. Don Moeller is here. We got to give some love to all of our sponsors, from Jennings and the Jennings Burger and the chicken and waffles over at State Fair. I'll get back to all of that after I get back from my blue Hawaii, including the crab cake down at Fadley's. Look, this guy could be a guest any day, anywhere on my program, right? This is like a real journalist. This isn't a toy department guy. But he loves the Ravens. You know what I mean?
It's a real guy. Listen, last thing I knew, Tom Lubienko was running around Annapolis trying to cover state politics. Next thing I know, he's the darling of cable news. So welcome, Tom Lubienko.
Tom, I love having guys on that know everything about Mike Pence and still listen to my program. I tell you, it's great.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you know, I'm sure Pence has never been to Fadley's, but, you know, maybe that would fix some things, right?
Well, it depends whether there's females and males mixed in there or not. Look, we'll get to the book. The book is Piety and Power. You're a local author. The books are, you know, recently out. We've got impeachment every day. Lord knows, when anybody's listening to this, what might be happening in Turkey or Korea or Hawaii, where I am, or anywhere. I want to talk about you and getting involved in this. And to Don's point, your background as a journalist. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm going down to the museum before they close it down on December 31st. Oh, and, you know, so many of us have dedicated our lives to this. When I see David Simon, I don't think of the wacky guy on Twitter who's, you know, maledictive, keeps us entertained. Mm-hmm. I think of the frantic guy when I was 17 years old working at the Baltimore Sun in the overnight, coming back from some murder and telling stories. And I think behind every book and every guy like you that does what you do, there's just this wealth of storytelling and all that stuff. And first and foremost, you're a Raven fan, dude. You're okay with me, man.
Thanks. Yeah, you know, I'll tell you a great story about the Ravens. So when I moved out to Indiana back in 2011, is right after I finished covering the 2011 session. Actually, it was right after Schaefer died, probably like a couple weeks after he passed away. And I get out there, and I've never been to Indiana before. Kind of get my feet wet.
That was
wet.
A good decision, by the way. Never going to Indiana before.
I did think about storming the place and bringing a few Mayflower moving vans with me.
Somebody, just to F with me the other day, sent me a Mayflower with an Oriole logo on it, like giving me a hard time. Yeah that kind of cut
let's
deep,
not
Tom.
Go there.
Tom, that wasn't good. That
go back to, your Indiana story.
That didn't
story.
Feel good.
I'll tell you, this State Senator Jim Merritt, real nice guy, is running for mayor out there right now. He comes by my press shack, and he asked me, just realized, you know, says, "Hey, do you like the Colts?" Just trying to get to know me. He has no idea I'm from Baltimore. And I'm like, well, hell yeah, I love the Colts, man. The Baltimore Colts.
Right. The only Colts that matter, right? Exactly.
That's right, man. he kind of soured on it a little bit after that. And you know what? I think about, was it that season? The next season is when we won the Super Bowl.
Well, Amir Ballard Greg Ballard and I are friends, so I had many back and forth. Yeah, I try to keep a couple Republican friends just to make sure everything's cool, you know, but let's get on to Pence and your background here and going to Indianapolis, which is interesting unto itself on a football basis. The story of Mike Pence, it's fascinating 3 years into this thing. I felt like 3 years into Obama, we knew Biden pretty well, you know, and mm-hmm. At this point, it feels like this sort of silver-haired, you know, shadow guy that we don't hear much about. We only hear from them when they want to be heard from, kind of like Trump's kids. It really is sort of like a whodunit all the way around to say, what does Mike Pence do all day? You know, I often wonder that.
Right. Yeah, everyone takes them to that elf on the shelf moment. In the White House, where Schumer and Pelosi and Trump were there, and it looked like he was just trying to melt into the curtains.
Right,
somehow.
Right.
Look, when I started this, he was as mysterious to me as anybody. And you know, I mean, Don knows this. When when we the reporters kind of hang around folks, you get to know them. And you know, I always got a sense of O'Malley. I'm sure, you know, O'Malley wasn't always my biggest fan. He'd kind of give me crap whenever I'd see him at the gym down at the Merritt. You know, he didn't like when we dig into whatever was going on with slots and, you know, sales tax and all that. But you get a sense of the person. I tell you, man, Pence was the only person I ever covered where I could never get a sense of the guy. It was just like he was a robot or something. And it was really hard to kind of wrap my head around.
He seems like the anti-politician. Like, I've never heard him speak. I've never heard him say anything particularly intelligent or inspiring or with any enthusiasm. It's fascinating who people do vote for, because he seems like he could never run for president. You know what I mean? Literally, there is no charisma. And again, 3 years into that, I know more about Melania. I've certainly seen more pictures of her. literally. And I find that to just be... to be fascinating as a kid that grew up with, you know, Mondale and George Bush, who then went on to become a president. You know, that the vice president was sort of a significant dude back when I was a kid to some degree, right? Maybe Lyndon Johnson all the way on, right?
Refresh our memory for our listeners, Tom. Where was Pence? Which role was he when you started covering him?
So, you know, the reason I went out to Indiana was with the Associated Press was because they needed a State House reporter to cover Mitch Daniels, because it looked like he was going to run for president. And I think, you know, 3 weeks after I got out there, he said he wasn't running for president. And then I started covering the governor's race of Mike Pence. And, you know, I didn't know the guy. It seemed like, you know, just another Republican congressman, pretty conservative, you know, talking about Indiana, pretty red. Didn't really think too much of him. I knew that he was very disciplined in the messaging. But, you know, the first campaign thing I ever covered with him in June 2011, I listened to him, and he was so on message and so flat that I was like, gouging my ears out almost. I'm like, man, I'm going to have to cover this guy for at least another 4 years. It was like deathly boring. Deathly boring.
Well, I mean, you got a boring guy and you've written a book. So, you know, of a guy who by the time this airs could be in jail or could be president.
Well,
right?
That's it.
I mean, we're in a fascinating place for you to be writing a book about. I mean, did you know he could be going to jail or could be president? Well, I mean, obviously, you knew he could be president when you wrote the book, right?
Well, you know, the funny thing about Pence is, and this is kind of how I sold the book, actually, the more I got to know him, the boring is just a put on. And it's actually great politics for him, right? It's one of my old sources told me that boring is his camouflage. And he nailed it. Because Pence, what's actually going on is everything's going on behind the scenes. And, you know, the more I wrote about him, the more I saw that, like, he's doing a lot of work lining up political donors, always running for the White House. He's very methodical. But it's almost like a stealth candidacy. And that was really, and I think that's part of the reasons we were able to do a book on him, was because there's just not a lot known about him, is that there's not very much on him. And he's super important. I mean, look, this guy, you don't get to be vice president by doing nothing. And there, here he is right now. I mean, you know, he could, like, I mean, a lot could change, but I mean, he could either rise to the presidency or get, you know, removed with Trump. I mean, it could kind of go either way at this point.
We certainly want to get into the current situation and how you expect to see him navigate that. But I, like Nestor, I'd like to go back to the beginning when you start covering this guy as a gubernatorial candidate. And I was fascinated because you said, you know, that you almost gouge your eyes out because there was no animation in his affect. There was no. Am I right, Tom, to say that when I look at him and I think typically of campaigns I've worked on, leaders that I've worked with, most of them have to have some level of charisma? And I don't mean this as a criticism of Mike Pence, but I don't think you'd ever look up Mike Pence in the dictionary and see charisma.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, look, the reason I got into covering politics, one of the reasons I've enjoyed it so much is, like, you guys remember the story of when William Donald Schaefer outs Paris Glendening's affair with his deputy chief of staff in public at the Board of Public Works meeting? I'm like, Man, you can't. Right. Can I curse on here? Am I allowed to curse on
here? How about your license, Nestor? I don't know.
Go for it.
You can't make this stuff up, right?
Is that? I'll just say that thing was incredible, and I was like, I want to cover that. So to go from that to Pence is very disciplined, and he's so good at being disciplined, and I think that it was kind of a challenge, right? I mean. You know, you guys know, I mean, Nestor, you're a reporter. Don, you've been around reporters for forever. You know, we love we're like a dog who needs a bone. And I looked at Pence and I was like, man, this guy is so locked down that, like, I got to pull the mask off and see what's really going on behind him. And I'll tell you something I found. He likes those caricatures of him out there. When you have the caricatures of him as like a theocrat and an ideologue and, you know, Christian Wright, Jerry Falwell, crusader type, he likes that stuff.
So he doesn't mind. Go ahead, Tom. Right? I'm sorry.
Yeah, because it keeps his base with him. It keeps his political base there. But you know what I found when I worked on this and pulled it apart was he's not a theocrat at all. He's not an ideologue. He's an opportunist. Mm.
Interesting. So he doesn't mind, for example, I mean, it's one of the things that talk show hosts and Stephen Colbert and others, they love to talk about that he refers, it's Karen, right, is his wife's name.
Mm-hmm.
He loves to refer to her as mother. Now, I don't think we've heard that since, you know, the movie Witness or something. I mean, who calls someone mother? So are you suggesting that the whole calling his wife Karen mother is part of this sort of persona that he likes to put out there?
Well, that's a little yes and no. No, let me put it to you this way. So I'm on in Baltimore, and I'm dropping my T's a little bit more, and I got a little more twang right, in my voice. Because here, I'm in Washington, right? And, like, whenever I'm around, you know, other people from Washington, you know, we just kind of talk normal. But if I see someone from Baltimore down here, and, you know, it's only 45 minutes away, but it might as well be a world away, you know, kind of talk more Baltimoreese.
Well, we had Ben Cardinal last week. He calls it Washington, so I knew he was from Baltimore, right?
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing, right? But, you know, the funny thing is, like, I go home or whatever, like,
hey,
I don't really put on the O, you know? Like, right. I don't do it as much. And I think that's what Pence was doing with mother, because when he comes out here, he doesn't start calling her mother until he moves to Washington. At least that's what his friends tell me. And I think it was
interesting.
Right?
That's an interesting take.
Yeah.
Is he playing the part of Mike Pence to some? I mean, is that
that's
what
right.
you're literally?
Yeah, no, it's so meta. It's hilarious, right? Like, He's playing the part of the stilted politician. It's like, yeah, absolutely.
Well, how does this translate, Tom? This is so fascinating. And
by the way, the book, Mike Pence and the Taking of the White House. Tom Lobianco is here, a longtime Baltimorean.
Get to the bookshop, get to Amazon, wherever you get it. Get this book. It's a fascinating study. How does this, Tom, again, it's the politics of it that fascinates me. How does this personality translate into someone who was a real force, right, in Indiana politics?
Oh yeah, he's very good at the inside game, and you know, look where he starts out. And I didn't understand this before I started reporting the book. And a lot, you know how it is. You put stuff in a chronology, and it starts to make more sense to you. He actually gets his start in Dick Lugar's political machine back in the 80s, and this is like, I mean, it's not like the Richard J. Daley machine or like the Irv Kovens machine, but, you know, it's kind of a smaller version of those. I mean, it's back when machine politics was the thing. And he gets his start as a foot soldier. And the first two races he runs for Congress back in 1988 and 1990 is as he moves up from a precinct committeeman, the loyal foot soldier in the party machine, to running for Congress. And he's an inside guy. I mean, he gets the way those first two runs work is that all the political donors clear the field for him, clear the Republican field, at least. When he runs again in 2000, the same thing happens when he runs for governor. I'll tell you a great story. This is in the book, and it has to do with the side effects of running the inside game so well. In 2010, when he's going to run for governor, he's trying to decide whether he's going to run for president or governor. all the kind of the town fathers, the big money men from the Republican Party, clear out all the other Republican candidates, including Indiana's House Speaker, a man named Brian Bosma. And, you know, Don knows this from being around Annapolis. Every House Speaker in the world thinks they are the governor. Maybe it's Mike Miller. I think Mike Miller might.
Well, the two Mike. Let's say the two Mikes. It was a two-headed governor when the two Mikes were there. Right.
So they push out a man named Brian Bosma out of the field. He's the House Speaker of Indiana. Bosma is pissed, and he never forgets this. So out in Indy, they'd had a local gridiron dinner, which is a great roast of the politicians. And in 2012, Brian Bosma gets up on stage, and he starts going through a roast of all these different people, and then he gets to Mike and Karen Pence, and he describes a scene. He describes a scene where the cops are called to the Pence's house, and it's a very dark scene. And they go up to the house, and they see the garage door banging up and down, open up and down, and something is amiss. So they call into the house. They say, "Mr. Pence, Mrs. Pence, is everything all right?" And they don't hear anything. It's dead silent in there. And they walk through the staircase. They walk upstairs. They're looking around. There's no movement. They can't hear anything. It's just dead quiet. And the bedroom door is ajar just a little bit. And they whisper. They say, "Mr. Pence, is anyone here? Is everything okay?" And they push open the door, and there's Mike Pence having sex with Karen Pence. And after they finish, and Karen gets up, there's a chalk outline around her. And Bosma tells this joke, and 75% of the room is laughing their tokuses off. And the other 25% just gasp, just a dead gasp. And Bosma doesn't know if he's gone too far in telling this thing. He sends flowers to Karen the next day, but they never forgive him. They never forgive him for this. Understandable, right? It's just horrible. It's attacking them personally. So let me flash forward to, they refuse to go to a gridiron dinner ever again after this, on principle, because it's just humiliating. So let me flash forward to 2018, to the national gridiron dinner. Now they're going to gridiron dinners again. That's fine for them. They think everything's okay. But this time it's with Trump. So Donald Trump's up on stage, and Karen and Mike are on the dais with all the other Mnuchin and everyone else from the cabinet and top journalists and whatnot.
The band of rogues, as I like to refer to them.
Yeah. So if you thought the Bosma thing was bad, making fun of their sex lives, yeah, just imagine what Trump comes up with. So Trump starts in with that. He says, "Oh, Mike Pence wakes up every day, and the only thing he thinks about is when he's going to get my job. He's always asking everyone at the White House, 'Oh, is Trump gone yet? I want to be president.'" And everyone kind of laughs.
Do they even know each other? I mean, I don't want to interrupt your story, but like, okay, fair enough. I mean, it felt like such an arranged marriage. It really did.
Let's come back to that, because I want to follow. Go back to the story with Trump.
Let me just finish this real quick, and I think it'll get.
Well, how well they like each other and know each other would lead to whatever is now being said. You know what I mean? Yeah.
So go back. Trump's at this dinner.
Let me just finish this one, because I think it'll give you a sense of how they interact. So Trump says this, right, and it's kind of like, whatever. Okay, it's not terrible. And they're watching this thing. And then he starts in, and he says, "You know, a lot of people think that Mike doesn't have a sense of humor, but I can tell you that he does. He's a really good straight man."
Did anybody laugh?
Their faces get red. I'm watching Mike and Karen in particular through this, and their faces start getting real red, and everyone's laughing. And Trump hits it again. He says, "Oh, he's just so straight. Isn't that right, Karen? Just the straightest." And he is, I mean, he's humiliating him in a way even worse than Brian Bosma did just 6 years earlier. I don't think that And I think that there's more to it than just a roast, right? What's the rule? Singe, don't burn. And Trump is burning him.
Well, he has
but
no.
That's Trump. I was going to say, Tom.
I remember him. What was it at the? What was the dinner? Was it the Jefferson Jackson dinner? Whatever it was, but where Trump tried to speak one day and they tried to script jokes. He's not of his many flaws, and obviously I think he has many flaws. Mm-hmm. Lack of humor is near the top of the list. I can't imagine Donald Trump, even in private, telling you it's just he's not funny. I remember it's like that right. part of Good Morning Vietnam where they're saying, "I know funny, and you're not funny." And Donald Trump is not funny. Now, talk a little bit about, because you've mentioned the vice president and Karen. In your book, you talk about this, what aides are learned early on was that Karen was she was the audience of one, that she had the vice president's ear like no one else, and you had to identify who the Karen whisperer was. Talk a little bit about that.
Oh, it's huge. Yeah, when I was covering him early, I used to think there were three people in the inner circle. And it's one of the tightest political circles I've ever seen. Is Mike Pence, Karen Pence, and the longtime chief of staff, Bill Smith. But later I found out that it's even tighter than that. It's really just Mike and Karen at the center of things. Nobody else in there. And Karen is the sole gatekeeper to Mike. And it used to be that Bill Smith, the former chief of staff, and he was a Christian Right guy, he's a James Dobson type, that he would control access to Karen. But later, a guy named Marty Obst, O-B-S-T, and this is important for your listeners if they want to understand politics in Washington, they should get to know him. He starts to control access to Karen Pence. And what's funny about this is that the Trump people had trouble understanding Pence's world and getting through to Pence. So what they started doing is the Trump campaign people started working through Marty because he could get Karen to agree to things. And they started referring to Marty as the Karen whisperer.
And, you know, that's not, Tom, as you said, you've covered this a long time. Just so we don't appear to be picking on the vice president, I think mm-hmm. we've all known elected officials who really do what we'll say have an audience of one when they go home and have dinner or when they lay their head on that pillow, that we know that there's going to be one opinion that really does matter. That's not
that's
that
FDR
unusual.
Story,
do you agree?
Right?
That's not that unusual.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Right. What's the never piss off the person who goes to sleep and wakes up next to the candidate.
Right. Listen, I always remember I have a cousin many, many moons ago and his son went to him and he was all upset and he said, Dad, mom's wrong on this one. She's going to punish me. I didn't do it. He went through the whole litany and the dad listened. It's a true story. Dad listened and paid attention. It was all over. He said, "You know what, buddy? I agree with you. I think mom probably was wrong this time. Let me bottom line this for you. I go to bed with your mom at night, not you. So you're going to take one for the team." I mean, it was that straightforward. Now, fast forward to Nestor.
I want to reset. Tom Lobianco here, Mike Pence, and the taking of the week. No, he's not Mike Pence. He just wrote about him. Go back.
Well, this is, I think, where you want to go, Nestor. So we're fascinated now, Tom. Nobody, truly. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why you're all over cable news. As I said, you're the darling. You get up early for Morning Joe. How do they treat you on Morning Joe? They treat you nice on there?
Oh, they were great. You know, the funniest thing in the world was talking with Michael Steele. Of anyone in the Ehrlich administration, if you told me he was going to be the national celebrity, right. I guess I didn't pick that one out in the moment.
I used to know Michael Steele. He doesn't return my calls anymore, man.
He landed on his feet. Wouldn't you say he landed on his feet? So do they green room you on there, Nestor's thing? When you go on Morning Joe, do they put you in a little room ahead of time and tell you what they're going to ask, or they just tell you to walk out there with a cup of coffee?
Oh, they give you, they kind of warm you up a little bit. But no, they don't pre-screen the questions with you. But I had a pretty good idea, where they were going to go with it. I ran into, who did I see over there? Ryan Costello, the old moderate Republican congressman from outside Philadelphia. We were talking about a few things. It's fascinating, I remember when Maryland had an even split in the congressional delegation back when we used to have people like Helen Bentley,
Connie Morella.
Connie Morella.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
right? Like, you know, Costello is like kind of in that mold, and you don't have people like that anymore. I mean, you know, even Ehrlich back in the day was more moderate.
Yeah, people would have trouble understanding that. So, jump to Nestor. I think Nestor's fascinated in this. I love the way you said it, Nestor. It almost seemed like an arranged marriage. It's hard for us as outsiders trying to get a glimpse into this Trump presidency.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it takes a special, and I tweeted this, you know, literally today, it takes a special kind of morally bankrupt person, right, to latch on to the pussy grabber, you know, like in that news cycle, that there were a lot of people who had a career, who had a gig, and say, you know, I would have liked to have been vice president, I'd like to be president, but I'm not going into that fire. And now, as we sit here in impeachment, which who could have predicted that, right? I mean, the not giving up the businesses, you know, literally everything that is the news cycle would lead Karen and Mike Pence to say, well, that's how that's how I'm going to become president, or that's the best way to become president is this guy's going to go to jail. I, you know, it feels to me like the dogs are going to be right behind Mike Pence, that if Donald Trump finds himself guilty of whatever he's guilty of at this point, including admitting he's guilty, that Mike Pence saying he wasn't on the call and wasn't aware of this, it would feel to me like there will be a target on him next.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I think this is what Karen Pence was worried about when she, you know, in that moment where she refuses to kiss him on election night, you know, she says, "You got what you wanted, Michael. Now leave me alone." It's because my understanding and what I suspect to be true is that was their joint political career that he had just flushed down the toilet with a bet. And the bet was that Trump would lose in 4 months. He would only be on the ticket for 4 months with Trump, and then they would kind of catapult to the front of the pack for 2020. And look, it's not a bad political bet.
It's the Republican way, right, Tom? It's traditionally the way Republicans do it. Next man up, right?
Yeah. Wait your turn, right? You know, but I'll tell you, it doesn't produce very good candidates. Well, you know, Romney ate dirt in 2012, and you know, I remember the Democrats up in Massachusetts put up Martha Coakley twice, and she lost twice. And you know, but that was the gamble, and that's why Karen got so angry, because it just kind of ruined their political career. You know,
well, the shock to all of it too, though, right? Like, he wasn't supposed to win. They must have been shocked too, right? They probably had much more of a plan to lose than to win.
Yes, that was the game plan. And, you know, the funny thing is that politically he'd been weakened so much by that point that he was actually in almost a unique position to say yes to Trump. To your earlier point, you know, I report for the first time that Bob Corker, the Senate Foreign Relations Chairman, guy from Tennessee, moderate Republican, he kind of, you know, it's really funny. He kind of looks like the guy from the Big Lebowski, the sheriff of Malibu, the one who throws the mug at his head. So Corker gets called up to Trump Tower, okay, and he says, and he's riding up the elevator up to meet with Trump in May 26th, 2016. They're going to talk to him about trying to become VP, and he tries to duck the meeting. He's like, I don't want this. And he knows it could be bad for his career. He doesn't want anything to do with it. And they're like, oh, just take the meeting, come on. So he goes up there, and he sits down for 30 minutes with Trump. And at the end of the meeting, Trump tells him, he says, oh, hey, just so you know, there's some cameras downstairs. They're going to be waiting for you. And he's like, oh, don't worry about it. I won't say anything. I won't tell him about our meeting. And he's like, oh, no, that's fine. You go down there and tell him that you're the tick. And he's like, I'm not going to lie to them.
Oh, my. You know, it's just the impetuous nature. That sort of reflects the entire presidency. One of the things in an early book that Chris Matthews wrote, and we'll let you go. One of the things that Matthews wrote about was that if you wanted to understand power, you had to understand, his way of phrasing it was, who's in the room. Is Mike Pence in the room when important Trump decisions are being made? Is he a player?
He's there, but he doesn't move the needle. And I think I know the book you're talking about. When I was in my brief time in politics, I was working in the Massachusetts State Senate. They actually made us read that book. Is it Hardball? His book,
yes,
Hardball?
Exactly.
1998?
Exactly.
Beautiful. Oh, yeah. My God.
I love the book,
handbook.
And it's a great concept.
Well, sort of the reason he's there is to not say anything.
Well, that's what I'm asking. Literally, that's what I'm trying to get from Tom. What does Trump see as Pence? Let's flip it for a minute. What does Trump see as Pence's role for him?
Oh, boy. Well, as it stands
Christian
right
placeholder.
Now, make sure he doesn't take him out. I think that's, you see the fear and the paranoia from Trump right now. In terms of, could Mitch McConnell use Pence in some way to remove Trump? But it isn't always that way. Normally, it's just foot soldier. When times are good inside there, they see Trump or they see Pence as a good foot soldier. That's why they put him out there doing fundraising, doing a lot of campaign stops. He's not a forceful presence. He does not move the needle on anything. And that's not really that strange as VPs go. But there's some leeriness. And remember that, I reported this for Yahoo News after we finished the book. Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump were talking about getting rid of Pence. Now, they deny this. They say it's not true. But the Pence's people were acting as though it were true. Their actions, their fear in terms of how they handle things inside there tell you everything you need to know. They're talking about getting rid of Pence on the ticket in 2020. So I always say the loyalty runs in one direction. It runs from Pence to Trump and not the other way around.
Well, everybody should have been able to see it. Is his big game plan now, Tom, is he all focused? Is he all in for 2024? Is that the game plan?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and that's when I was talking with an advisor to both of them. It kind of straddles both Trump and Pence worlds. And he was telling me, he's like, look, the day after November 6, 2020, that's when the Pence for White House campaign begins. That's when he has to start making decisions about, which constituencies is going to line up, who he brings on board. Right now, it's fascinating. As vice president, he can kind of be everybody's friend. But there's going to come a point where he has to start making some serious decisions. And that is the day after the 2020 election.
I hope they pump in the Flint water into the jail cell when that happens.
Stay tuned.
I hope your book sells well.
That's Tom's second book. Anybody, you want an inside look, you love politics, you love to get an inside look behind the curtain as to what's going on. Tom Lobianco's Piety and Power, just a terrific book, Tom. We encourage everybody to go out and get it. And thanks so much for taking time to come back to your Maryland roots.
How's
here?
That Lamar Jackson jersey working out? Is it working out all right, Tom?
Oh, yeah, man, totally.
Tom Lobianco, the book is Mike Pence and the Taking of the White House. You can also find him out on Twitter at Tom Lobianco. It's very easy to find. Lobianco, HarperCollins, and anywhere books are sold. He's Don. I'm Nestor. We are Baltimore Positive and WNSD.net, AM 1570. And we never stop telling stories about the vice president.